that killed an American in an effort to gain leverage at the negotiating table. And President Trump said enough.
Planned Taliban talks take an abrupt pause. It's Monday, September 9th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Hong Kong residents march for liberation. Refugees spread out in Australia. Increasing pressure on coal production. Finding fresh food and rare Cambodian theater. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said Sunday that U.S. President Donald Trump made the right decision to call off peace talks with Taliban leaders at his presidential retreat because of the terrorist group's ongoing attacks in Afghanistan.
We had a commitment that they would meet in Oslo to begin reconciliation conversation. And then the Taliban overreached. They killed an American in an effort to gain leverage at the negotiating table. And President Trump said enough.
The top American diplomat said Trump's planned Sunday meetings at his Camp David retreat outside Washington with the Taliban and Afghan President Ashraf Ghani, albeit separate talks with each, were set in the belief that they could further America's national interest to end the 18-year U.S. involvement in Afghanistan. The announcement shocked the region that was expecting to see the formalization of a recently finalized draft peace agreement between the Taliban and U.S. envoy Zalmay Khalilzad, but Pompeo held out hope that the peace process will continue.
I hope it's the case that the Taliban will change their behavior, will recommit to the things that we've been talking to them about for months. In the end, this will be resolved through a series of conversations. I hope the Taliban will agree to meet with the Afghan government.
Negotiators for the U.S. and Taliban have held nearly a year of peace talks. U.S. Chief Negotiator Zalmay Khalilzad last week said his team of negotiators had drawn up a draft framework agreement that, if approved by President Trump, would allow 5,000 American troops to leave five military bases in the country within 135 days. The longest war in American history started with U.S. military efforts to wipe out al-Qaeda terrorist training grounds protected by the Taliban that were used to launch the 2001 terrorist attacks on the United States that killed nearly 3,000 people. The 18th anniversary of the attack is Wednesday. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Typhoon kills five in North Korea, three in South Korea. Start of latest Mekong Dam draws fears of river's tipping point. Huge crowd takes Hong Kong protest message to U.S. consulate. Hong Kong's grandpa protesters speak softly and carry a stick. Central Beijing off limits as army rehearses for anniversary parade. Expanded coverage of all these stories and much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia, and we also invite you to stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Thousands of pro-democracy demonstrators in Hong Kong gathered near the U.S. consulate Sunday. They were urging President Donald Trump to help liberate the city. Riot police watched the protesters as they marched toward the consulate, many of them waving American flags, as we hear more from Reuters correspondent Amir McCarthy.
It started peacefully. Strains of the Star-Spangled Banner pouring through the streets of Hong Kong. Thousands of protesters gathered at the U.S. consulate on Sunday to call on U.S. President Donald Trump to liberate the Chinese-ruled city. But the demonstration took a dramatic turn and swiftly turned violent, with protesters barricading and smashing windows in the city's upmarket banking and shopping district. Police once again fired tear gas in a bid to disperse the protesters, now commonplace after 14 weeks of demonstrations.
Reuters correspondent Emma McCarthy. protesters originally took to the streets in June seeking the withdrawal of an extradition bill which would have permitted criminal suspects to be sent to mainland China for trial in courts controlled by the ruling Communist Party. Four other main demands have become entrenched in the protest movement, including an independent investigation of police brutality against protesters, an unconditional release of detainees, not defining the protests as riots, and allowing the people of Hong Kong to choose their own leaders. Last week, Hong Kong's leader Carrie Lam announced that her government will formally withdraw the controversial extradition bill. Demonstrators said Lam's move to withdraw the legislation amounts to too little, too late. Happening now in Asia, Cambodia has launched a campaign to end child labor. A powerful typhoon slams into South Korea. And there's much more available as you visit our website, voanews.com, and visit the VOA Asia Facebook page. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Cambodia has launched a campaign to end child labor in the brick industry by the year 2020. That's a move many industry observers cautiously welcome while expressing doubts that that goal will be achieved. After the horrors of fleeing to Sinjar Mountain in northern Iraq to escape Islamic State fighters in 2014, several hundred Yazidi refugees are now starting new lives in the Australian outback. Members of the minority religious group have been resettled in a handful of regional centers to relieve pressure on refugee services in Australia's main cities. Phil Mercer reports from the New South Wales city of Wagga Wagga.
Wagga Wagga is proud of its country roots. It's a farming and transport hub halfway between Sydney and Melbourne. Several hundred Yazidis are joining others here, who fled persecution in Africa, Myanmar and Afghanistan. Layla explains how she fled to Sinjar Mountain.
In Iraq, ISIS killed lots of men and killed the children. Very, very hard story from Yazidi in Iraq. The ISIS came, we go to the a mountain. I, with my whole family, we live in mountain, not eat, not have any water, not eating. After 5 days, by a walk, we go to the Kurdistan.
Layla came to Australia with her husband and young child. Earlier this year, she was reunited with relatives she had had to leave behind in Iraq.
After my family all come to here, now it's easier for me in here. I'm very happy in Australia because my whole family here, we all in safe in Australia. I'm loved Australia.
Take us through who's here now in front of us. You have brothers and sisters all together. Just take us through who's here.
My four brothers are in here, and my two sisters, Suad and Ida.
I'm Shahab, and I'm here about 3 months. I come from Iraq, directly from Iraq to Australia.
Shahab's a former university teacher who spent more than 5 years in a camp after fleeing Islamic militants.
We are 8 people. We live in the one tent. And also the tent was making by like a nylon. So if it is a winter, it was very, very cold. If it is summer, it was very hot. I want to be a university teacher, a good university teacher, maybe in the future. My sister want to be a doctor.
Starting a new life in the suburbs of an outback city isn't easy. Language is a problem, but there is a healthy dose of neighbourly goodwill from Ian Lockwood, who lives nearby.
Iraqian people moved in 2 doors away from me. And I went up and introduced myself because I noticed no people were going there. And I said, I'm the old bloke, sit on the seat and drink coffee every morning. Anyway, I met them and I help as do whatever I can to help.
To what extent is this quite a humbling experience for you?
It
because
is.
These are people who have been forced to leave their homes and to
exactly,
start again.
Exactly. People don't realise what these people have been through. If you spend a couple of weeks with them, you find out very, very hard, harsh. Because I didn't realise all this stuff was going on.
Belinda Crane is the head of the local multicultural council. She says refugees are mostly welcomed in Wagga Wagga, although there is occasional racism.
I sort of say to families, you know, they said that, you know, occasionally they might have someone yell out something to them in the car, but they don't feel unsafe about that. They said it's sort of few and far between, but they have experienced, you know, people sort of going, you know, go back to where you come from or whatever.
Do you think that most Australians appreciate that refugees coming in will sooner or later be part of the great fabric of this country?
No, I don't really think that people actually see the bigger picture stuff and realise how migration has actually made Australia.
Several thousand refugees have helped to revitalise Wagga, a city of about 70,000 people. Yazidis held a rally in Wagga, urging Australia to help relatives stuck in camps back home. Haji Gundor, a 21-year-old refugee, is pleading for justice.
Yazidi people had everything. Money, food, house, family. So they want to live in Iraq. But they want justice to stop what's happening to them.
Life in Australia for Yazidis does come at a cost. For Adlan Osman and her 14-year-old son Aham, there is guilt that they are safe while others are not.
She said we in Australia is very good, but then we get worried about the people in Iraq a lot. It makes it difficult for us.
Almost 3,000 Yazidis have been granted visas under Australia's humanitarian program. Campaigners are urging the government to give refuge to many more. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Wagga Wagga.
Coming up, a popular fuel source is feeling the heat. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. A powerful typhoon slammed into South Korea early Saturday, where authorities say at least three people were killed and power disrupted to 57,000 households. Typhoon Lingling tracked past Seoul before heading to North Korea, where five have been reported killed. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for this and many more stories. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, for more than a century, coal has kept the lights on in the industrialized world, and it firmly remains the fuel of choice in many parts of Asia. But coal-fired power plants are closing across the United States as well as Europe. Market forces has shifted to cheaper natural gas and renewables, not to mention the concerns about climate-changing carbon dioxide that the plants produce. Coal remains an important part of the economy in the western U.S. state of Wyoming, where VOA Steve Barragona tells us the state government is trying to put the brakes on the transition.
You'll find two kinds of fossils in the Wyoming town of Kemmerer. City Councilman Robert Bowen sells one kind at his fossil shop downtown.
That's one of the fun things about some of the fossils is they tell stories. You know, like this guy right here where you see the bite mark.
The other kind is fossil fuel. A coal mine feeds the Naughton Power Plant just outside town.
It's huge for us for, you know, as far as our economy. The power plant, the coal mine, provide a lot of jobs here.
Wyoming is the nation's leading coal producer, but the energy industry is changing. Dana Ralston heads coal, natural gas, and geothermal plants at Pacific Corp, which owns Naughton. He says coal is more expensive now than gas-fired electricity. And renewables, like wind and solar, are moving in.
You know, renewables have grown year after year after year, and they are a cheaper alternative from a market perspective than a coal plant.
Late last year, Pacific Corp announced that closing the plant ahead of its schedule would save customers money. Wyoming has not embraced the energy transition. The state's residents have the nation's lowest rate of acceptance that humans are causing climate change. And University of Wyoming economist Robert Godby says that state officials have not prepared for the changing market.
We've been late to the game. We have been reticent or maybe just slow, or maybe we've denied the changes that are going on. And so we've been slow to react to them. We haven't been proactive. We've been reactive.
We understand that a change is coming, but we're simply asking that let's do it with some wisdom. Let's not put the plane into a nosedive. Let's let it glide down easy and sort this out.
Dan Dockstetter is a Wyoming state senator. A new law that Dockstetter sponsored puts a wrinkle in Pacific Corp's plans. It requires the company to look for a buyer before closing the plant. Godbee calls it a speed bump.
If the current owner of a coal-fired power plant can't make money with that plant, why would somebody else buy it? But on the other side of the coin, the devil's in the details.
Godbee says the details are still being written, but the state may structure the deal to raise the costs for Pacific Corp.
With that uncertainty, firms hate uncertainty. Maybe they'll look at other states and close those power plants first.
Robert Bowen says the new law will help the town of Kemmerer buy time, but trouble is ahead.
It's not if, it's when. To prevent some of that, we need to start looking at diversifying our economy here. One of the things that we could be pushing a lot harder is paleotourism with fossil fish that we dig here, which is something that's very unique to this area.
Bowen says fossil tourism alone won't save the town, but it would help.
You get the scales and bones on both sides.
Like the creatures entombed in stone here, Kemmerer must adapt or go extinct. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Kemmerer, Wyoming.
This news from VOA Asia. A human rights expert says North Korea's call on the United Nations to cut its international staff involved in humanitarian work there could be a move to gain leverage over sanctions relief. Pyongyang wants the reduction because it says UN programs have been ineffective. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, where does your food come from? Many city dwellers look no further than the local grocery store. But each summer, American state fairs give farmers the opportunity to show off their skills and give the rest of us a better idea of all of the work that happens on the farms where food comes from. Saqibul Islam has more from the Maryland State Fair in Timonium.
A rainy day at Maryland State Fair may empty the outdoor rides, but does little to dampen the excitement of this American summer ritual.
Piglets!
I like the cows. And I like the pigs. Like, I learned everything. I'm new.
Pregnant animals visiting from local farms are a rare spectacle for kids anyway. From the city.
I learned that it takes a pig, like, maybe in 3 hours to give birth to all her piglets.
Chris Gabriel brought her grandchildren to learn about life in the countryside.
I want them to see that there are farms, there are woodlands, and there are people here that are dedicated to that, especially 4-H kids.
For more than 100 years, 4-H has been a group that helps teach children hands-on practical skills in science, healthy living, and agriculture. Many kids in the program end up showing off their farm skills in summer festivals like this one.
So this is like a culmination of their project work. So they get to bring it to the fair. It is on exhibition for the public.
Leslie Portfield teaches kids about the work that goes into the meals that they eat each day.
Because not a lot of people know where their food comes from or what particularly happens behind the scenes with agriculture. So being able to teach these people that don't have daily interaction with animals about specific things like how a goat's body system works or how we produce food and fiber and meat from cows.
With only 20% of Americans living in rural areas, for many visitors to the fair, this is their most extensive exposure to farm life, giving them a better appreciation that goes into raising animals and giving junior farmers an audience for their fruits of their hard work.
There he is.
He's so pale.
In Timonium, Maryland, Saqibul Islam, VOA News.
The nearly extinct masked dance of Lakon Kol was on display recently, thousands of miles away from its birthplace in Cambodia. A group of devoted amateurs brought the ancient dance to the Washington metropolitan area. VOA's Chetra Chap choreographs this report.
The graceful hand gesture and expressive faces of these amateurs are all part of the ancient Cambodian dance called Lacaon Cowl. This performance is part of the annual Cambodian Culture Festival that happens annually in Silver Spring, Maryland, near Washington, D.C. The event brought artists and vendors from all across America to celebrate Cambodia's rich heritage.
This is the first time that I've seen Lacaon Cowl in America. They are doing a great job of preserving Khmer culture, civilization, and art. They are doing a good job, and that makes me very happy.
The organizer of Cambodian Community Day says it's an honor to help keep the ancient traditions alive.
Lacaon Cowl is an art that seems to have almost disappeared. UNESCO recently listed Lacaon Cowl as a cultural heritage that needs immediate protection. So it's really an honor for us to help bring it back to life. This is our biggest production in 19 years.
This early Angkorian art form was almost completely wiped out by the Khmer Rouge regime. In the late 1970s, it banned the study of the dance and killed at least 1.7 million people, including dancers, artists, and writers. The dancers are exclusively male. They wear masks and perform a Cambodian version of the classic Indian folktale of Ramayana, the story of a prince who enlists the help of an army of monkeys to rescue his wife from a demon.
The performers can speak in Lacaon Cowl, so there is a recorded or live narration. That makes the dance and body language crucial to telling the story, depicting emotions like anger and love.
The dance master, Suchita Ng, is originally from Battambang, Cambodia. He told VOA one of the biggest challenges was recruiting enough male dancers, then training over 30 performers, most of whom were not professional dancers. He also had trouble finding traditional costumes and jewelry from Cambodia.
It's hard to find professional dancers. Even when I do, some of them aren't interested in doing Lacaon Cowl. I only want people who are interested, whether or not they can dance. I am willing to take the time to simplify some of the dance moves and teach them.
The performance, Ng said, was a success.
I'm so happy. All of my students did a great job today. I'm also grateful that I have 5 students from other states, 3 from Lowell, Massachusetts, 1 from Atlanta, Georgia, and 1 from Seattle, Washington.
And the crowd was as pleased as the dance master.
I'm very proud that Cambodians here are able to organize and perform Lacaon Cowl.
I'm Chatra Chap for VOA News, Silver Spring.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. We also invite you to download our program. It's available in those places as well as our website at voanews.com. And we stream our program every day on VOA Asia Facebook. You can hear us on the radio, Voice of Chung Rung, Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chung Rung Christian University, located in Tainan, Taiwan. Hello to everyone there who's listening today. Thanks for joining us. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Carl Starling. Managing Editor Diane Gao, our VOA Asia team, including Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Kelly Jean Kelly. And thanks to Michelle Liu for streaming our program on Facebook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.